So isn't it obvious? Tower of Babel, UN, the UN, all nations, Babylon, that sort of thing. Where, you know, there's all sorts. Babylon is the United States. No, it's not. And it's not Babylon either.
But there's a Babylon system, right?
Well, that's a different thing. Yeah, there is. The Babylon system, that's a good point. The Babylon system is based on the Tower of Babel idea. What is the Tower of Babel? People say, let's build a city and a tower to heaven, and all of us will speak one language, and we'll all be one nation, that we aren't scattered. We'll be all gathered together in one place. That's the kingdom I'm talking about. I'm talking about Jerusalem, a city, a palace, you know, reaching to heaven, a temple, all nations, the nation all gathered together, everybody speaking one language. So the Babel system, the Babylon system, is the false kingdom. That's the idea. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about here. Instead, when we read this passage in chapter 14, verse 8, and another angel, a second one, followed, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. He was quoting Isaiah. The angel was quoting the text we just read from Isaiah tonight, wasn't he? She who made all the nations drink of the wine of the passion of her immorality. Yes. Or we could look at the other passage I referenced here, Revelation 18, verse 2. And he cried out with a mighty voice, saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling place of demons and a prison of every unclean spirit, and a prison of every unclean and hateful bird. And this whole chapter goes on to talk about the fall of Babylon. So, Babylon is a cipher for Rome. It's nothing more than that. In the first century, especially at the time the book of Revelation is written, you couldn't say Rome. Even it wouldn't have been good poetry in the first place. But aside from that, you couldn't say Rome. You couldn't write Rome is fallen. You could write Edom, and that's the direction the rabbis took it. They used Edom as a cipher, as a code for Rome. The believers used the word Babylon as a code for Rome. And I could prove that to you a couple different ways, but I'm not going to bother. It's not what we're studying tonight. I'm just showing you Isaiah being used in the New Testament. Here we have two examples of the same verse, Isaiah 21:9 being quoted. All right. How about 1 Corinthians? Let's go over to 1 Corinthians. Chapter 15. We might as well pick up two of them while we're here. You know what 1 Corinthians 15 is famous for? This is the great resurrection chapter where Paul is defending the concept of resurrection. He's arguing with Greeks, sophists, who don't want to believe in a resurrection. He says, you got to be kidding me. You're going to be a believer in the risen Messiah, but you don't believe in a literal resurrection. What are you, a Sadducee? And so chapter 15 is his argument along those lines. And we read in verse 32. He says, if from human motives I fought with wild beasts at Ephesus, what does it profit me? Nobody really knows what he means by that. Did he really fight in the arena at Ephesus? Not in the book of Acts.
If it's Theria or Therion, that could be beast system, beast person, beast animal. It's got five different beasts going before.
Yeah, there is some ambiguity there. I like to think that there's just a story that's not in the book of Acts about Paul getting thrown in an arena in Ephesus. There is an apocryphal story about that, about how he shuts a lion's mouth.
course, you know what charismatics think, right?
Mm-mm.
Well, it's like it's warfare, spiritual warfare.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't think that's it. That wouldn't make sense. That wouldn't make sense in this context. Because he's risking his life. He's not... His point is, if there's no resurrection, what did I risk my life for? I could have been killed. That's his point. If I fight with wild beasts at Ephesus, what does it profit me? If the dead are not raised, let's eat, drink, for tomorrow we die. So in other words, if there's no resurrection, Paul says, there's nothing better for a person than straight up hedonism. Enjoy life as much as possible, because this is it. And when it's over, you're done. And don't risk your life, you know, for stupid religious ideas. That's but once again, he's quoting from Isaiah, right? And we just saw that a little bit ago. Okay, there's another one from this chapter. I'm going to pick up while we're here. Down in verse 54. He says, but when this perishable, that's this human body, will have put on the imperishable, that's the resurrected body, and this mortal will have put on immortality, then will come about the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. And then another quote, O death, where is your victory? O death, where is your sting? That's not from Isaiah. But the first one, death is swallowed up. We saw that. That's the prophecy of the kingdom that we just read in Isaiah 25, where it said, he will swallow up death for all time, and the Lord God will wipe away tears away from all faces. It's a prophecy of the kingdom. All right, back to Revelation, and we'll pick up that one that Donna mentioned earlier. Revelation chapter 3, beginning of verse 7. Our master dictating a letter to the assembly at Philadelphia says, and to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, he who is holy, who is true, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, who shuts and no one opens, says, I know your deeds. Behold, I have put before you an open door, which no one can shut. Because you have a little power and have kept my word and have not denied my name. Okay, this is obviously coming from Isaiah as well. This is we learned this regarding Shebna and Eliakim. This is in reference to the steward of the house of David. But Yeshua in this passage is saying that, you know, he's quoting the passage saying, I have the authority of the house of David, the keys to the kingdom, so to speak. Yes?
See, does this coincide with when Jesus says to Peter, behold, I give you the keys?
Exactly. Yeah, right on. Exactly. So if you see on your sheet here where it says Key of David, I also have you going over to Matthew 16. So just like King Hezekiah was able to invest that authority of the house of David with his steward, Yeshua does the same. He invests his authority in his disciples. He says, in this passage, he says to Peter, I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. So the keys of the house of David and the keys of the kingdom of heaven is the same thing. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, which is parallel to whatever you open will be opened, whatever you shut will be shut. Whatever you loose on earth shall have been loosed in heaven. So this is legal authority that he's handed on to the disciples. Just like Hezekiah was able to give his steward legal authority. So this isn't the only place that we see that the Master has assigned the 12 disciples authority in his name. He gave them, in Matthew 10, it says he gave them authority. In another passage, he tells them, you will sit on 12 thrones, ruling over the 12 tribes of Israel. The 12 disciples are pretty important, you could say.